It's good to have each one present tonight. We have some visitors with us, and we're glad to have them in our audience as well. Marriage and divorce is a critical subject. In fact, Jesus said if lust would cause you to violate the holy relationship, he said it'd be better to pluck out your eye or cut off your hand, because that's better than going to hell. That puts things in perspective of how important it is to maintain a pure relationship. The best time to begin to study this topic is early on, even before marriage. Sometimes people get married and they get in trouble and they're unhappy and they want to study, but the problem is now they may want to justify their situation. And it's going to be difficult sometime to have the attitude that's essential to learning truth. We talked about that in the first two classes, attitudes and how they affect our dealing with Scripture. But we've been studying we studied about attitudes, and then we studied the words that have to do with our topic, marriage and divorce and adultery and fornication. It's not hard to find these words used in a way the Bible does not use them in religious literature written by people of the church, in tracts, magazines, books, or in sermons. And so it's your obligation and it's my obligation to put to the test whatever we hear. I assure you, whatever you want to believe, you can find a church that teaches it, if that's what we want. Say, I don't like that, I'll find another church to teach you what I want to hear. You can do that. But when time is no more and we stand in judgment, we're going to stand before Jesus Christ, not a preacher, not a church. Our feelings won't judge us. Well, I just thought it was okay. That will not be the standard of judgment, but what's written in the book of God. Therefore, it ought to impress upon us the serious responsibility to dedicate ourselves to understanding the Scriptures, even though at times there may be some rather intricate things that we've got to deal with. Tonight, we're going to be looking at a very important passage on this topic. It's Romans 7, 1 through 3. We're going to be employing some of our past studies as we use the definitions that we have found the Bible gives, not men, the Bible gives words. But this is a very critical passage in understanding God's will on the topic, if I understand it. So let's open our Bibles to Romans 7. We'll just begin by reading the first three verses. Romans 7, 1 through 3. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version, 77 edition. Or do you not know, brethren, for I am speaking to those who know the law, that the law has jurisdiction over a person as long as he lives? For the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he is living. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law concerning her husband. So then, if, while her husband is living, she is joined to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from the law, so that she's not an adulteress, though she is joined to another man. The main topic of Paul's writing here is not marriage and divorce, but actually relates to the old law. However, he illustrates his point, which is the jurisdiction of law, with marriage and divorce. So he states the proposition here in verse 1. Do you not know, brethren, for I'm speaking to those who know the law has jurisdiction over a person as long as he lives. So then you go down to verse 4 to pick up that topic. Therefore, my brethren, you are made to die to the law through the body of Christ. But verse 2 and 3 are serving to illustrate the jurisdiction of law, and that it is limited by the life of the people involved. So we'll look at that at verse 2 and verse 3. It says in verse 2, for, so picking up from verse 1, law's jurisdiction as long as he lives, for, here's the illustration, one that they would be familiar with, the married woman is bound by law to her husband while he is living. We have a question on your lesson. In a lawful marriage, one is bound by law. I say a question, it's really just a statement. Bound by law. That is very important. The word bound, the way we use it, and the way you might find it in a dictionary, is to tie two people together with a rope. That's not this. This is not a physical bond. This is not physical contact. This is reference. Bound by law. It's a legal bond. He says that in the text. That's very important. So in a physical bond, you tie two people together with a rope. When you cut the rope, both are free. That's not true with a legal bond. You buy a new car, you sign an agreement to pay for it over 36 months. And so the company is bound to maintain that car for that length of time. But let's suppose you put sugar in the tank and ruin the engine. Is the company you bought it from still bound to repair the car? Obviously not. Are you still bound to pay for it? Yes. A legal bond, one person may be bound in reference to the law that they're under, while the other party may not be bound. That's different from a physical bond. And so, the word, look at this word bound for a moment. Very important. All the way through our study, we've been emphasizing words. And if you're a member of the church here, you know about the bus. Words are like a vehicle, and it carries several passengers. And that's true with the word bound. One of the passengers in our language can mean obligation. We're bound to pay our mortgage note. We're obligated to pay our mortgage note. Or the word bound can connote restraint. Here's an illustration. We are bound by subdivision laws from putting a trailer house on our property. We are restrained legally from doing that. And so, first of all, it's to recognize and not assign arbitrarily a meaning to the word bound. What does the writer mean? When he says in verse 2, the married woman is bound by law to her husband. We know it's a legal bond. Now, to further define the word, now again, we could go to a lexicon. We could go to Thayer's lexicon, for example. We've pointed out the danger of using a lexicon. One, many people don't have one, so they have to depend on what you say, the lexicon says. Two, a lexicon can be misused. Thayer's lexicon has definitions and comments. It's a commentary as well as a lexicon. If we don't know the difference, we could be quoting his comments as a lexical definition, which would be a mistake. I can show you error in his comments in Thayer. He's an authority on definitions, but he makes mistakes sometimes in his comments that are not in harmony with the Bible. So it's very important to understand that. A safer way to define words is to define them by contextual usage, where anybody with the Bible can see what the meaning is. So hold your finger at Romans 7. We're going to go to another letter by the same writer, 1 Corinthians 7. This whole chapter is devoted to marriage and divorce and remarriage. Down in verse 39, same writer. He uses the same word that he used in Romans 7. A wife is bound. Same word. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, so here you have a contrast. One way to define words is by seeing the contrast. That's what you have here. While her husband is alive, she's bound. He's dead, now what? She is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. So what does bound mean? She is not free to be married to whom she will. It's restraint, not obligation. That's not my definition. That's the definition based on the same writer in another text discussing the same subject and using the same word and indicating what he meant. So when we get back to Romans chapter 7, verse 2, a married woman is bound. She is restrained. She is not free to marry whom she wishes as long as her husband lives. I don't like him anymore. We can't get along. He's ugly. I want to marry this guy. You are not free to do so. Who says? The law. God's law. When Jesus was asked, is divorce okay? Is it lawful to divorce your wife for any cause at all? What law did he go to? Genesis 2:24. He said, have you not read? That's the law that governs. Not United States law. God's law. Not church law. Not tradition. God's law. And so bound by law to her husband. Now you'll note in your lesson something about this word to. We often use to in the sense of contact. You take some glue and you have this object and that object and you glue them to one another. Contact. That's one meaning of the word to. But sometimes to, even in our language, has to do with reference, not contact. The floor is perpendicular to the wall. Reference, in reference to the wall. And so in your lesson, we ask you to look in your own English dictionary and find a definition. There's a number of definitions for the little word to. And what that tells you is that little bus has a number of different passengers. So in any given sentence, if you want to properly represent the speaker or the writer, you have to be sure what they meant by it, what passenger they put on the bus, not what I can make it mean. So here I have some definitions, like here's from Oxford Dictionary. Identifying a particular relationship between one person and another. He is married to Jan's cousin. That's not my illustration. That's in the dictionary. Married in reference to this person. In various phrases indicating how something is related to something else, often followed by a noun without a determiner. Made to order, a prelude to disaster. And so the word to can have the idea of reference. Now just, we're looking in Romans 7, but go back to chapter 6, verse 2. What does the word to mean here? Is it contact or reference? You died to sin. Obviously reference, is it not? In reference to sin. Nobody stops to even think about it. They immediately understand that's what to means. Now look in the chapter we're studying. This time I'll go down to verse 4. My brethren, you were made to die to the law. In reference to, not contact, in reference to the law. So we know that the word to can have that idea. And so when you go back to verse 2, the married woman is bound by law in reference to her husband. Not that they're stuck together. In fact, we'll see in just a moment, she decides to go marry another man. But yet she's still bound to the first man. And so it's reference. Bound by law in reference to. Now, I've got here on your lesson under 2C some illustrations. Examples of a person being bound in reference to another without the other person being under bond. Let's look at these. Deuteronomy 23. Deuteronomy chapter 23. Verse 21 and 22. When you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay to pay it, for it would be a sin in you. The Lord will surely require it of you. So you make a vow, you're obligated to keep the vow. If the vow refers to positive action or something you will not do to somebody else, they may not even know you made the vow. And they're not under bond. Person may say, I am vowing never to speak derogatorily to my wife again. She may not know you made the vow. She's not under a bond. You are. What kind of bond? A legal bond. God's law said, you make the vow, you keep the vow. When you get married, you make a vow. I'm going to love you, honor you, cherish you until death do us part. He said, you better keep your vow. God expects you to keep your vow. But what if my wife doesn't or my husband doesn't make any difference about your vow? The only exception is if they are sexually unfaithful and you put them away for that reason. Matthew 19:9, which we studied in a previous class. Look at Numbers chapter 30, verse 2. We're talking about being bound. I read a verse about taking an oath, where you're obligated to keep your oath. Look at this verse. If a man makes a vow to the Lord, or takes an oath, so he makes a vow, a positive statement, or takes an oath, may refer to a negative statement, it certainly would include it, to bind himself with a binding obligation. He shall not violate his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. So he's bound, whether anybody else is. It may be in reference to somebody else, but he is bound by his statement. Look at Judges chapter 11. Judges chapter 11. Verse 30. So we just read these two passages where a person makes a vow, they're bound by their vow. All right, by the law of God. Jephthah made a vow to the Lord, verse 30, and said, if thou would indeed give the sons of Ammon into my hand, then it shall be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the sons of Ammon, it shall be the Lord's, and I'll offer it up as a burnt offering. We're not going to get into a discussion about what happened as far as the daughter and what he did with her. The point is this, whether daughter or animal, did they have any say in the vow? Was their conduct in any way, did their conduct alter the vow in any way? No. But it was in reference to whatever came out of the doors of his house. And in this case, his daughter. And so you can go on and read through the end of the chapter, and it seems to indicate that she maintained her virginity till death. She did not marry. So this was a one-way legal bond. Notice we have this on your class lesson. This was a one-way legal bond, not physical bond, in reference to another. All right, look at Acts chapter 23. Verse 12. The next day, the Jews formed a conspiracy and bound themselves under an oath. Isn't that what we just read in Numbers and Deuteronomy? Bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink. Here's negative. Will not do something until they kill Paul. Was Paul bound? No. Was their vow in reference to Paul? Yes. But they said, I will not do this. I will not eat or drink till we kill Paul. So you enter a marriage, Romans 7, you're bound by law. And you stated it when you got married. You said, I'll love you, hold you as my own, honor you. What's that last statement? Until death do us part. I will not love another person. I will not form a relationship of marriage with anybody else. And that's what that bond does. It restrains you from marrying who you might wish. First Corinthians 7:39. As long as your mate lives. All right. Now, continue to read. Yes, sir. If you want to put it that way, but the point is the law is what says neither one of them can marry whom they wish. 1 Corinthians 7:39. That's the point. So when each one takes a vow to the other, enters, what two things are necessary for a marriage? What's the first thing? A covenant. What's the second thing? Sexual consummation. We studied the word marriage. So you make a covenant. You make that covenant and you consummate it. You are not free to marry whom you will. You may change your mind next week, next month, 20 years later, doesn't make any difference. Ronnie?
Well, I think Rocky's point is we're going to come to the point where one of them has committed adultery and is thus still bound to that husband, but the husband is no longer bound to the wife.
If he puts her away for that. He's still bound until he puts her away for that reason.
What Rocky is trying to make is that in that sense, yes, there are two oaths. Because the wife makes an oath and the husband makes an oath.
There's two oaths. I would just say two people are bound by law. That's the way I would put it. Two people are bound by law. And it's independent of the other person. That's exactly right. We are getting there. One can be bound and the other not be bound. That's exactly right. He says that right here in our text. So if her husband dies, she is released from the law, the text says, concerning her husband. The law that binds her. So what does that law bind her? What does it restrain her from doing? Huh? Marrying whom she will. 1 Corinthians 7:39. Look, you got Bible verses that give you the answers to these questions. But if her husband dies, now what? She can marry whom she wishes in the Lord. Right? In accord with the Lord's will. Not just anybody, but somebody that's in accord with the Lord's will. Alright, so then if, now he backs up verse 3. Based on what he said in verse 2, that's the That's the idea of so then if. That being true. If while her husband is living, we raise him from the dead. Now we've got him back in the picture. While her husband is living, she is joined to another man. Now we talked about this in a previous class. This little phrase, joined to. Do you remember what the literal word means? Do you remember? Is it the word that all the way through the Bible for married? No, the answer is no. It's to become ones. Remember when we defined marriage, we saw that is a phrase that's used synonymously with the idea of marriage. She becomes another man. That's marriage. In their terminology. He leaves and cleaves. She's given and taken. Now they belong to one another. All right. So she is joined to or becomes another man, or she marries another man. King James translates it, marries, even though it's not your ordinary word throughout the Bible for married. Marries another man. She should be called an adulteress. Now, why is she an adulteress? What does the so then if tell you? Why is she an adulteress based on so then if? She's still bound to somebody else. Put her husband back in the picture, verse 3. She marries another man. She's an adulteress because, he says, so then if, according to the law, she's still bound to the first man. Now, who's she married to? Second man. Who's she bound to? First man. Bound and marriage are not the same thing in this passage. We use the word bound. I'm going to get bound up. I'm going to get tied up, get married. And that's the way we use the word. That's okay. I'm just saying that's not what it means here. The marriage is a relationship. The word bound here is bound by law. It's a legal bond. All right, now note, continue reading. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law so that she is not an adulteress. Now, let me ask you a question. Here's this woman. She left her husband, married the second guy, the another. Every time she sleeps with him, they commit adultery. The first husband dies. She sleeps with him tomorrow night. Is it adultery? No. Is she still married to him? Yes. What makes the difference? The verse tells you. No longer bound to the first law because first man because he's dead. So he says, she's not an adulteress, though she's joined to another man. So you say adultery is being married to somebody that's been married before, or married somebody that, and you've been married before. No, it's not just that. It's a person who's been bound by law, or is bound by law to somebody else. One of the parties, at least one, is bound by law to somebody else. Here's a woman. She's not guilty of adultery when she sleeps with her husband the next night. But is she still guilty of adultery? What? From the past, isn't it? You know, if you murder somebody and nobody knows it, 20 years later, are you still guilty of murder? Yes. Yes. And she's got to repent of that, or she can answer to God for it. But it's no longer adultery because she's not bound by law to another man. That's what the text says. All right. So there's two causes given for remarriage in the Bible where you can remarry with God's approval. Here's one. Your first husband died. What's the other one? What? Is fornication the other one? Adultery is the other one? So if I want to get married to somebody else, I go commit adultery and now I'm free to marry? You've got to put the other person away for fornication. Matthew 19:9. Not just fornication. You divorce somebody because they're a fornicator. It's not you divorce them and you find out 6 weeks later they were cheating on you. Now I say, oh, I found out they were cheating on you. No. You divorce them, you sever the relationship because they were a fornicator. For fornication. Matthew 5 and Matthew 19, Jesus talks about that. So that's the only other cause. Any other divorce, any other reason, when a person marries somebody else, as long as their first mate is alive, they are committing adultery. Now, we don't have it on this lesson. But what if somebody finds this out 10 years after they remarried? Is it okay now? You mean it's not okay? You mean somebody's been married 10 years and maybe has kids, God would expect them to sever that relationship? Can you prove it? Ezra, right? Book of Ezra. Of course, even if you didn't have the book of Ezra, repentance would tell you. Repentance is when you stop doing that which is wrong. And if you're committing adultery, you stop committing adultery. All right, so we answer our question on part A and B. Part B, when this woman with a living husband marries another man, does that release her from the law in reference to her marriage to the first man? The answer is no. In this scenario, who is she bound to? Who is she married to? She's bound to the first man, married to the second man. Okay. Now, we asked the question 4, and we've answered it. What changed her status from an adulteress to not an adulteress? The husband died. That's what changes it. Not a preacher, not a church law, not our feelings, not children, not time. The first mate dies. And so that's what the text teaches in Romans chapter 7, verse 1 through 3, and it's absolutely critical. So when you study Romans 7, 1 through 3, it's very important that we define terms. Many, many years ago, when I was up in Oklahoma and I was restudying marriage and divorce and remarriage, I would go through and I thought I had it down. And they had a guy that would come to my house and start asking questions. You talk about aggravating. I said, man, I got to go back and restudy this again. And it's the definition of these words that becomes critical. Let me show you what happens if we don't define the words correctly. There's a gospel preacher. He's a man I highly esteem. He's passed away now. I'm not even mentioning his name. I learned so much from this man. I would drive to hear this man. I drive an hour, hear him preach an hour. Excellent teacher, very knowledgeable. But I disagreed with him on marriage and divorce. Now here's the way he explained this passage. Here's why he would say, what I'm saying can't be correct. So here's a man that puts away his wife for fornication. Is he free to remarry? Yes. If he's free to remarry, based on Romans 7, is he still bound to the woman he divorced? No, he's not. All right. Now, I'm saying that Romans 7 teaches she's still bound to him. The guy says, this doesn't make sense. Here's why. You're telling me God's law says that man is no longer obligated to be her husband and to render the duties of a husband. But that same law, God's law, binds her to be his wife. and to render the duties of a wife to him. How in the world can God's law tell the man, you don't have to be her husband anymore and render husband duties to her, but she has to be a wife to you and render wifely duties when God's given you the right to marry another woman? He said, that doesn't make sense. And you know what? It doesn't. What's the problem with it? Definition of the word bound. It's not obligation. It's restraint. Not free to marry. Now let's go back and look at that scenario. The guy divorces his wife for fornication. Is he still bound to that wife? No. So let Paul define his circumstance, 1 Corinthians 7:39. What does he say about that man? Free to be married. The woman. Does that say anything about the woman?
No.
The woman. When we left her, she was bound to that guy. Does her adultery get her out under that law? No. The text says no. So, is she free to be married? No. She's still bound. There's no logical inconsistency or problem with that. The only problem is with it, we may not like it. But you can see how the definition of a word, okay, the little word two, debates have been held between gospel preachers. And the argument is made that I referenced in the first part of this class. If the man is bound to the woman, so you go to the chalkboard, you draw the man and you draw the woman. The text says they're bound by law to one another. Okay? Matthew 19:9 implies that if the man puts away his wife for fornication, he's no longer bound to her. It doesn't say that there, but you know that has to be the conclusion because of Romans 7. If he was still bound to her, when he married again, he would be committing adultery. So you go to the blackboard and you erase the line between the man and the woman. Where does that leave the woman? Free. Here's the bound to contact like a rope. This is not something, you know, you say, preacher must sit in their offices and dream up all this stuff. No. This is debated. And this affects people's souls. And so what's your obligation, 1 Thessalonians 5? What? That's Acts 17, but that's good. They search the scriptures daily, see if the things being said were so. What does 1 Thessalonians 5 tell you to do?
Examine everything carefully.
Hold fast to what is good, or turn away from that which is evil. That's your job. Craig, you had a comment.
I was going to say the point that Paul is trying to make in Romans is talking about jurisdiction of the law. It's not talking about all the duties the wife and the man have towards each other. It's just talking about that's the point he's trying to make.
Yeah, jurisdiction of law. That's his whole point. Right.
You cut the rope and they're unleashed, but now it contradicts what you said.
I'm not sure I caught it all, but I think I agree with you. If I don't agree with you, I'll just say, I didn't hear you. All right, but this is a very important topic, and if you have further questions, you can email me, text me, and I may not know the answer, but that's okay. That's how I learn. Or we can discuss it more. Sometime get together, your house or mine, or at my office away from home called IHOP. We can do it there too. So, and discuss these topics further. Thank you for your good attention tonight. Next class, if the Lord is willing, we'll get into the study of 1 Corinthians 7. The whole chapter is on marriage and divorce. So we'll have a couple of classes on 1 Corinthians 7. You'll see class 14 says 1 Corinthians 7, Roman numeral 1. There are going to be two parts. So we'll look at that if the Lord is willing in our next class. Thank you for your comments and your good attention.